The Rolling Stones said it pretty memorably. You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need. And I love that song, and it gets to a hope I have for you. If there's an area of your life that is painful or stuck, if there is an area of our shared communal life that is painful or stuck, know that a new way forward is possible. Even if the problem seems much bigger than you, like an epidemic of gun violence, or a culture of sexual abuse, or racial injustice, even if the problems seem much bigger than you, know that what you need to make a new start may be close at hand, and it might not look like much at first. I ran into Patty Frew Waters last Sunday at coffee hour. She was here to lead a volunteer training. Patty is the executive director of Seacoast Family Promise, an organization that partners with religious communities to house temporarily homeless families. Host congregations provide food and shelter during the evenings, and during the day, SFP staff and volunteers work with parents to develop financial plans, find housing, put supports in place for children. Sometimes they help guests find work, too, although most of the program's guests are already employed. South Church hosts families for a week in winter and 2 weeks in summer, and just for the record, it's a great way to serve. It feels really good, and it's a ministry of this church of which I think we can all be very proud. So I commend it to you as a way to serve. The program doesn't solve all of a family's problems. It's not a complete fix or a heart up for a hard situation, but it is a lifeline, a chance. And sometimes that's all a family needs to start over. Bethany Youssef turned to SFP for support in 2013. She had left a bad living situation with her two children, who were 9 years old and 18 months old at the time. And she didn't leave with much: a car, a diaper bag, some clothes, and a little food. Her first night away from her home, the family stayed in a motel, but she knew she didn't have the resources to sustain that expense. She was terrified. It's hard for me to even imagine that vulnerability, the need to leave a situation that has gone bad, the impossible choices: safety, shelter, food, schooling. Youssef found SFP through a church website and connected with Patty, and not long afterward, the family spent its first night in a congregation in the Hampton United Methodist Church. She says, "I'll never forget the feeling that first night. The first night the kids and I are on our inflatable mattress in a nursery room in a church, but for the first time in a long time, I feel safe. I started to feel hope and a tomorrow, that I was going to be okay, that the kids were going to be okay, that I would survive this." Bethany shared her story at a public event earlier this year, and it was written up by journalist Hadley Barndaller of the Herald. In that account, Youssef describes Seacoast Family Promise as more than a program that puts a roof over your head. She said, "For the next 8 weeks, we became part of an extended family. This program literally saved us and gave us a place to transition, save money, and continue working on our business," my business, she said. "They provided normalcy amidst change." Sometimes you don't have to have all of the answers to make a first step toward a new start, just a place from which to launch, a chance. For Bethany and her family, an inflatable mattress in a church basement and a kind community of support were enough to launch a new future. The whole world feels mired in intractable messes right now. I saw a picture in early September that captures vividly my experience of this moment. It was a satellite image of the Gulf of Mexico and the eastern seaboard. Three large white swirls arced across the water. Hurricanes Irma, Jose, and Katia lined up in a neat curve and pointed toward land. Major storms, each one poised to unload. So much of life has felt this way for months. The natural disasters, the human disasters, the breakdown of civic institutions, the barrage of assaults on racial justice, the torrent of stories about sexual violence and harassment. It has been emotionally exhausting. Just last month, we grieved upon hearing news of the shooting in Las Vegas. The scope and senselessness of that violence was breathtaking. That week, we opened our sanctuary as a space for healing and reflection, as we have in the past, but we did not hold a vigil as we did after Sandy Hook and Charleston and Orlando. We offered prayers of healing, of course we did, prayers of healing and peace to the victims and their families, but we did not wish our grief and remembrance to provide cover for continued political inaction around gun violence. Since we arrived at church, our Christmas Eve candles have been used 6 times to celebrate the birth of Jesus. Just as often, they have been used in rituals of healing after acts of national violence. That's not right. Chris and I couldn't bring ourselves to host another vigil that night. Instead, those who came were invited to reflect on the names of those affected, to write those names on the plastic protective cups that hold our Christmas Eve candles so that we could send them to our state and national public servants to spur them to action. And then just this last Sunday, it happened again. Another shooting in a church gathered for worship on a Sunday. Children, elders, a pregnant woman. It's a horror. So many of us thought that Sandy Hook would be the turning point, that it would spur the nation to address the issue of gun violence. And after a few years, many lost hope. There were bright spots in the work, but there was also intolerable inaction. There was little progress when it came to implementing common sense reforms on which many Americans agree. Stronger background checks, assault weapon bans, permit requirements, and an end to the policy that forbids the Center for Disease Control from studying gun violence as a public health issue. But it's not over. It cannot be over. There is a way forward even from this. Violence in society is a moral and spiritual issue of the deepest kind, for which many of the remedies happen to be political. And I want to say that we as a culture have been experiencing serial traumas, and it is the place of the church to hold and heal and console after those kinds of experience. But we, as a culture, have also been enacting serial traumas. And it is a place of the church to stop that from happening, to be part of the effort to have those things not happen. Both of those things are our charge as a religious community, as a community of faith, and we take them both as our own. The problem seems intractable, but the work of dedicated advocates is beginning to bear fruit. There is evidence that we are nearing a tipping point in public opinion. This year, 400 women associated with the group Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America expressed interest in running for political office. In the most recent election cycle, voters elected a host of people committed to addressing this issue proactively. I think of that mother, Bethany Youssef, caught in an untenable situation, committed to finding a brighter future for herself and her family even before she could see the way forward. She stepped out with a fierce faith in her purpose and found that an inflatable mattress in a church basement and a caring community were sufficient resources to chart a new way forward. The resources we need might not look like much at first, but opportunities will arise, as long as we are ready. Sometimes we need to shift our own mindset before deep change is possible. Many years ago, I read a book called The Joy Diet by Martha Beck. It was offered as a class in my former congregation. There are 10 chapters in the book, each associated with an area of reflection and exploration, and the first two chapters are called Nothing and Truth. For Beck, and for spiritual leaders the world over, the pathway to joy and other blessings begins with a willingness to cultivate emptiness. The first and most essential task is to carve out 10 to 15 minutes a day in which one is committed to doing nothing. This might take the form of traditional silent meditation, but there's a lot of latitude. As long as you make yourself completely inaccessible during that time, uninterruptible, as long as you commit to silence and inactivity. There is a whole world of wisdom available to us if we can learn to embrace stillness and inaction. I've had a meditation practice for years, and I know firsthand that sitting still like that is often profoundly uncomfortable. I'm always pretty amused when people talk about meditation as a relaxation technique. It does work that way in the long haul quite well, but a lot of my own experience on the cushion has been uncomfortable and even painful. I sit still, and anything I've been holding at bay, whatever feelings and thoughts I have buried under a swarm of activity, rise to the surface. It's not always difficult. I do often experience well-being and peace during meditation, but when uncomfortable thoughts and feelings arise, there is nothing to do but see and feel them. Meditation practice has been one of the great gifts of my life, one of the most life-altering activities that I've taken up. Over the course of many hours on the cushion, I have learned, often reluctantly, to sit still with the truth of my experience just as it is, to meet the present moment with an increasingly open and compassionate heart. In the process, I have learned a lot about myself and the world. I've learned to acknowledge my deepest hopes in life and to see the ways my daily actions move me toward or away from those hopes. I've become clear about the values I hold most dear: friendship, loyalty, beauty, justice, exploration, and I see the ways I do and don't embody them in daily life. There's an exercise in Martha Beck's book that gets at the spirit of embracing truth. She invites the reader to think about a situation that is really stuck and problematic. See you, Gus. Come back. She invites the reader to think about a situation that is really stuck and problematic. After reflecting on the facts of the situation, we are invited to ask, how do I feel? What is the painful story I am telling about this situation? Is my painful story true? Is it working? Is there another story that might open up a new way of seeing this situation? When I first encountered this question, I thought first of my spotty relationship history. I thought of friends and family members I have loved and lost in various ways. My story about this history was encapsulated in a single sentence: eventually, everyone leaves me. Beck invites the reader to turn that story on its head linguistically, to reverse it in various ways until it strikes a nerve that opens up a new way of thinking. I tried, eventually I leave everyone. Nothing. I tried, mostly people stay with me. True, but still nothing. And then, eventually, everyone returns to me. That sentence struck me to my core. It invited a whole new way of approaching my relationship. It forced me to acknowledge that the people and relationships in my life are always changing, and that fact represents both an end and a beginning. A world of possibility opened, a host of new questions. Among them, how can I open my heart to receive the people and relationships in my life just as they are right now? I thought of my father, who died when I was 9. He comes to me now as a soft and weathered grief. He's with me often as a wave of well-being when I see dads and daughters enjoying one another's company. He's with me as an influence in my intellectual pursuits. The truth is that he looms less large than he once did, but I can still receive my dad just as he is now, as a memory, an influence, a feeling. The ball is in my court when it comes to the activity of acceptance and rejection. It doesn't matter whether my first story is true or not. Maybe it does, but I have another story too. The same was true for all kinds of relationships. I learned to let go of the past in order to accept the present, and that changed my life. I used to be lonely. I'm not lonely now. In our personal lives, in the world, there are situations that seem intractable and fraught. Often the stakes are very high. But whatever is on your heart, know this. It may be something small that opens up a new world of possibility. A simple shelter in caring community, a new way of thinking, maybe even a healthy dose of doing nothing. If we keep our hearts and minds open, we just might find that we get what we need to chart a new course. May it be so. Amen.